time the wind blows puts me back in Manitoba many moons ago.
And as always, we pause at this time every Sunday to greet Gordon Goldsborough from the Manitoba Historical Society, who's here for another edition of Bound in Manitoba. Good morning, Gordon.
Good morning, Bruce.
Remind us what we're discussing this week.
Listeners may remember that last week we talked about Danish immigrant George Behrens and his pioneering hobby as an early ham radio operator. But there's an entirely different dimension to his legacy that relates to copper. So that's our topic today.
Where do we start?
Well, George Behrens arrived in Canada in the early 1920s, and around 1924, he came to Winnipeg to take a job at Vulcan Iron Works, just, you know, just off of Main Street there. That company
used to be.
Yeah, well, used to be, unfortunately, another abandoned site.
Right.
That company made all sorts of objects from metal, and Behrens was a good man for the job, having had experience in the brass and bronze industry while living in Europe. Family lore holds that one of the first jobs that George undertook at Vulcan was to manufacture brass doors for the new Hudson's Bay store here in Winnipeg. You know, the one that just down the road from the studio, the one that's being renovated right now.
See it from here.
Yeah.
Okay. You mentioned brass doors earlier, copper and bronze. What's the difference between copper and bronze? It's a combination or something like that, right?
Exactly right. Yeah. Copper is a chemical element that has actually many uses that were evident a long, long time ago. Indigenous peoples here made tools, ornaments, and weapons from copper. Well, going back at least 4,000 years, but copper's also useful when it's mixed with other things. So, for example, bronze is a mixture of copper and tin, and brass is a mixture of copper and zinc. These alloys differ in their properties, so brass is shinier and more malleable. It's useful in things like plumbing fixtures and musical instruments. You know, think of brass bands. Bronze is harder and is therefore useful for sculptures and plaques, especially in outdoor applications where ruggedness is important. And this is where we return to George Behrens, because in 1932, he founded the Western Canada Bronze Company.
Okay, well, so what did he make?
Well, it specialized in ornamental castings for things like nameplates, memorial plaques, cenotaphs, monuments, basically anything decorative that you could make from these metals. Now, I don't think that George Behrens put his name on items. It wasn't like artists that would sign their work. So we don't really know the full dimension of what he manufactured during his 32-year career as a metalworker. But it seems likely to me that since his company was one of the largest of its kind in Manitoba, well, he was probably responsible for many of the bronze items that we see around us today. If you see a decorative metal plaque, a sculpture, a fixture, a door, or a monument, and if it can be dated to somewhere between 1924 and 1956, well, I think it's a pretty good possibility that George Behrens made it.
Speaking of the Hudson's Bay, near the doorways, there are plaques on the wall, bronze plaques that say Hudson's Bay Company and the date, right?
Yep.
Possibly old George made them.
Very good chance, I think.
So you mentioned between 24 and 56. What happened in 1956? Did he close the company down? What did he do?
Yes, he did. Unfortunately, Behrens and his business partners sold the company to one of his competitors, a company called the Winnipeg Brass Limited, which in turn was a subsidiary of a much larger company, Canadian Bronze Limited, based in Montreal. And as so often happens, that company consolidated its operations in just a few places across Canada, and that meant the closure of the Behrens plant here on Clifton Street. Today, there's just one small foundry in Manitoba that can cast items in bronze. It's based on the Peguis First Nation up in the Interlake, and it's operated by sculptor Wayne Stranger. Otherwise, if a person has a major project to be made of bronze, or brass for that matter, you typically deal with companies in Eastern Canada.
What happened? Why isn't there anything left in Manitoba here?
Well, I think there's at least a couple of reasons. One is the high cost of bronze casting due to the need for lots of energy. When George Behrens was operating his metal furnaces to melt the metal, they were said to use as much electricity as a small town.
Wow.
So, you know, that would be costly. The economics of scale are such that today, well, only large foundries can do the work economically. A second reason is that most bronze use in Canada today is for artistic and commemorative work, not mass manufacturing. So the market is relatively small. It's just not worth the investment to start a large-scale foundry here. Yet, there is a thriving demand for copper, for brass, for bronze that is having, well, frankly, a rather negative impact here in Manitoba.
Like how?
Well, items made from these metals can be readily melted down and reused. And this fact is driving rampant theft of metal items. You know, but this is not a new problem. It goes back, well, to the time of the Roman Empire. Sculptures made by the Romans were made of stone and metal. There were ones of both. But the vast majority of the metal ones are gone today because, well, long ago, they were taken and melted down by thieves, leaving just the ones of stone that, well, frankly, you couldn't do anything with it.
Right.
Here in present-day Winnipeg, the former Thunderbird House at the corner of Main and Higgins looks to me rather disheveled due to the theft of copper sheeting from its exterior. Fires in abandoned buildings are happening because, in at least some cases, people are burning stolen copper wiring to remove the exterior coating and therefore extract the metal.
Oh.
And around the province, bronze plaques are disappearing from monuments to which they had been fastened.
Near my place, there was a stone commemorating the launch point for the Starkels going on their canoe trip down through Central America. That was stolen years ago. Finally replaced, but...
And some of them do get replaced, but not all. And, you know, repeatedly I've been to sites where there used to be a plaque, and you can tell where the plaque was because there's often an outline of, you know, where it's a different shade of color.
Yeah.
But it's been taken. And in a lot of cases, it just never reappears.
So what can we do to prevent this theft?
Well, I think in some cases, new plaques are now being made of materials which are much less appealing to thieves. So, for example, recently a plaque was unveiled by the Canadian Society for Civil Engineering, and it was intended to mark the historic significance of the Louise Bridge here in Winnipeg. That plaque was made of stainless steel, which is much less appealing to thieves. They just can't recycle it the way they can other metals. A few weeks ago, I visited St. Peter Dynevor Anglican Church, overlooking the Red River near Selkirk, and there, a plaque for Chief Peguis was unveiled by the Historic Sites and Monuments Board of Canada. As far as I know, it's the first such federal plaque in Manitoba that is made of etched stone rather than bronze. Most of the ones previous to that were all metal, but now they're making them out of stone. And I think this is because, you know, with laser engraving, you can do some really incredible things. You can put all sorts of images on stone, including photos.
Yeah.
My parents, when they passed away, we had a grave marker made, and it has their picture right on it. And that'll be there forever. It's really quite remarkable. You know, and so given these impressive capabilities of laser engraving, you know, I think this is a good alternative to metal plaques. Unfortunately, though, there are thousands of existing metal plaques, and they're out there ready to be snatched.
Yeah, what can be done to protect the existing stuff that's already there?
Well, right. It's, you know, it's impractical to replace all those metal plaques around Manitoba. So I think a solution is to address the underlying basis for the theft. In 2022, the Manitoba government passed the Scrap Metal Act, aimed primarily at the theft of catalytic converters from vehicles. But it also identifies things like metal grave markers, plaques, monuments, and statues as being vulnerable to theft, too. The new law requires scrap metal dealers to keep records of purchases for at least 2 years and to require the sellers to show government-issued ID. So, in other words, they're not anonymous. You know, they have to declare who they are. Buyers will take a photo of each seller, so likewise, we know what they look like. They are also required to obtain a description of the means by which a seller obtained the metal. In other words, you can't say, oh, I went and stole it off a monument. That would be pretty explicit. And they have to record the license plate number of a vehicle used to deliver the metal, if they in fact used a vehicle. I mean, of course, if they walked in off the street, you know, can't do that. If a buyer believes that metal they've purchased was stolen, well, they're obliged to report it to the police. And so I guess the underlying idea is to make it difficult for metal thieves to sell it and scrap metal dealers to buy it. So if there's no market for stolen metal, thieves will stop stealing it.
That's pretty comprehensive, all of the detailed steps that have to be done now weren't there before.
Let's hope that it has the desired effect.
Yeah, let's hope what did you call it, the Scrap Metal Act?
That's right.
Yeah, that'll reduce all these thefts.
No, I agree. And yet, as much as the removal of metal wiring and plumbing from abandoned buildings and the theft of catalytic converters bothers me, I think that the removal of plaques, monuments, and statues from public place really is despicable, because it deprives all of us of knowing about the people, the places, the events of the past that those items were meant to tell us about. I do hope that the Scrap Metal Act will have the desired effect, but I tend to be a bit skeptical. You know, therefore, I encourage anyone planning a new commemorative item to use materials such as stone that have little or no resale value. Things like that monument that I made for my parents. Mm-hmm. That, to me, is a lesson from the Roman Empire. You know, that stone is forever, metal not so much. Even though I suspect George Barron's would have been disappointed in the loss of business for, you know, his metalworking.
You're right. I mean, people get their bikes stolen and stuff. But your heart is with the history. We got to retain the history in the city.
You can buy a new bike. It's difficult to put up a new plaque. In fact, that's why I say a lot of them never get replaced, because nobody's putting them back.
I was surprised that one was replaced, the one I was talking about earlier near my place. Thanks for that, Gordon. Tell us what we're going to be talking about next week.
Well, periodically in this Abandoned Manitoba series, we update previous episodes, and that's what we're going to do next week. A hint of things to come: books and flax.
Oh, please, you should. I'm going to lose sleep over that now. Thanks, Gordon.
Bye-bye for now.
No matter where I go, every time the wind blows, puts me back in Manitoba, many moons ago.